I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Coming up at the Fire Hall Art Center is the world premiere of Circle Game, reimagining the music of Joni Mitchell. Joining me now are Andrew Cohen and Anna Kuman, the duo who conceived and direct this production. The show features the reimagining of Joni Mitchell's iconic and timeless music through a contemporary lens. The six members of the company are quadruple threats, seen in various productions throughout town. I'll get Ms. Kuman and Mr. Cohen to tell us about this show, this cast, and Mitchell's music, and what one might expect during the show's run, which begins the 29th of April and runs until the 20th of May at the Fire Hall Art Center at 280 East Cordova here in Vancouver. Andrew Cohen is the musical director and arranger for this production. He's a graduate of UBC. He and Anna developed Circle Game in residence with Capilano University, where she is a graduate. Anna is an Ovation Award winner. Both have had involvement in theater in and around Vancouver, with many credits to each of them. Visit firehallartcenter.ca for tickets and information. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Anna Kuman and Andrew Cohen. Ms. Kuman, good morning.
Good morning.
And Mr. Cohen, good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us, both.
Our pleasure.
So when did you two first meet?
We first met in 2013, and, well, we're actually a married couple, so we met in 2013, and, yeah, we started dating then, and it was kind of a long-distance relationship right from the start. Andy was due to travel through South America for 4 months, and so we met and started going on dates for about 2 weeks, and then he left for South America, and I was really sad, and he was really sad, and then we kept talking while he was down there, and he said, hey, do you want to come to Peru and meet up with me? And I said, sure, okay.
Yeah. I guess this is my way of getting into just sort of the mutual interests that you have, and probably my guess of what brought you together, and is that music? Is that right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we both studied theater in Vancouver after high school. I went to Capilano University and went to the musical theater diploma program.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy studied theater at UBC.
And so because you study theater, you've studied theater and you're involved in musical theater and music performing, is that the sort of music that you guys listen to, say, for leisure?
I mean, I think while we definitely do listen to a lot of different theater recordings, we also really are into the indie rock scene. We love gospel and jazz and world music and classical music and a cappella, and really, you know, our own personal tastes as we've left university have really, developed, broadened,
yeah,
would be a good word.
Yeah.
And we actively listen to a lot of different styles. We just spent the last 3 months driving 20,000 kilometers across the country. So that was a great opportunity to listen to a lot of new music.
Yeah, so where did you guys go from here to where?
We drove from here all the way to the border of Ontario and Quebec.
Uh-huh.
And back.
Yeah.
And also flew up to Yellowknife as well.
It must be a great way to see this country. But again, the music that you listen to be just as vast as the country, say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it also, traveling across the country was the first time that either of us had ever really experienced the prairies.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, having worked on this project, Circle Game, being in the prairies gave us a newfound understanding and appreciation for all of the prairie imagery that Joni uses in her music.
So I'm a little older than you guys, so but Joni Mitchell is not someone that folks our age would be listening to growing up, say, that unlike our parents or in
right.
some cases our grandparents. And for you guys, when was the first time that you experienced the music of Joni Mitchell?
Well, I mean, it really did kind of begin in 2013. That was the year that she turned 70.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of press about her at the time, and to the point where, it got into our news feeds into our lives, and we started hearing her music everywhere we went. Like, it felt like it was following us almost. And so, you know, as you do with anything that follows you in this life, you research it and investigate it. And the more we looked into her prose and her lyrics and who she is and the impact and the role that she had on the generation that she represents, the more we were totally fascinated and drawn to everything.
Yeah, you mentioned that year that she turned 70, and we really got to know her a little bit better. I mean, she did that interview with the disgraced Gian Gomeshi.
The Q interview.
Yeah, which is actually pretty good. It was fascinating to read later on what she thought of him, which was funny, actually. All of going back to, say, Love Actually, and that scene with Emma Thompson listening to the CD and the older version of Both Sides Now, and just we forget, I guess we also take for granted because she's Canadian, just what an impact she's had on music, not just in this country, but in general. I mean, you think of the Mad Men episode where it was Judy Collins' version of Both Sides Now comes on, and just what that meant to that show.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious to know for you guys, the significance of her. I mean, we don't really, it's sort of underplayed, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, it became very clear to us when we started this project that, people have a very emotional attachment to her and her music. And, you know, it varies from generation to generation. Like, we did a workshop of our show in 2014 at Capilano University.
Mm-hmm.
And we invited a lot of, industry professionals and also just friends of ours and also friends of the cast. But
we were cognizant as sort of a test market for us to make sure that we had a difference in generations in terms of the feedback we were getting.
Yeah. And so it was very interesting to read those comment cards afterward because it really ran the gamut. Like, certain people, like, loved the, you know, new arrangements that we had, and they felt that it really showcased the lyrics that Joni wrote, which is what they related to the most. And other people were very attached to her arrangements, and, you know, they wanted to hear what they've always been hearing. And I think that Joni is a very, style-wise, she was a very influential person, and still is to this day. I mean, she has this kind of effortless coolness that a lot of people try to emulate.
Yeah. Looking at her music through your lens of being millennials, as younger people, because I don't really like that word, millennials, but as younger people, I mean, than, say, people that grew up listening to her, does it take on a new relevance?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that drew us to it in the first place was how the kind of duplicitousness of how, at the time, the context historically in which she wrote those messages, everything that was happening politically in the world in the 60s and 70s, and how all of those messages are happening again now in 2017, how we are that generation who is now going to have to deal with environmental impact, political impact, cultural impact, economic, everything. That's going to fall on the shoulders of the young now. And all of those messages, everything that they were protesting for and fighting for, in that era, history is repeating itself. It's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, these messages haven't gone away, and yet they're still new in a way. They're still necessary. They're still happening now. And
So the cast, they're all well regarded in this town as performers. I'm assuming that your vintage of a younger age bracket. What sort of conversations are you having as the two that conceived of this show about Mitchell's music and lyrics?
Well, in rehearsals, we are coming at this from a very text-oriented place. Because we want the audience to come in with a, you know, leave all your preconceptions about what the music should sound like at the door, that's kind of our mantra.
What it was originally.
Mm. Yeah, and we're just inviting everyone to come in and, you know, look at it with fresh eyes and listen with fresh ears and really hone in on the lyrics and the message of Joni's songbook.
She really does get people, doesn't she?
Yeah, and I think that she's not afraid to, you know, comment on the ugliness of either society or just feelings that you have that, you know, might not be popular opinion.
Mm-hmm. And it's not in an accusatory way or an aggressive way. It's in an honest and empathetic way, which is, I think, one of the real powers of her sort of her prose.
Yeah. What are some of the songs that you, of hers that you like listening to, whether they're in Circle Game or not? Are there things that you return to time and again?
One of my favorite songs that I actually discovered while researching for this project is called Cactus Tree.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Joni's kind of written a story song. She writes about a woman who is recollecting all of these different partners. And, you know, there's this partner and this partner. And, you know, at the end of the day, what this woman is really searching for and trying to get is freedom. So, I don't know, that song just really resonated with me, and yeah, I just really love it.
For you, Andrew?
I remember the first time I heard Fiddle in the Drum, which was also during our creative process, and I actually watched a clip of her performing it in the 70s, mm-hmm. a cappella, unaccompanied, with her long blonde hair in, like, a long green dress, and in the round, like, with an audience all the way around her. And it was such an incredibly honest and vulnerable and empathetic song, and her voice and the words in particular, which were so unbelievably profound, that it made me kind of well up a little bit, which was kind of an unexpected reaction, for sure.
Yeah.
And then to feel like everything that she was saying then, with this kind of guise of, I think a lot of people at the time misinterpreted her appearance or her sound as being innocent or naive, and it absolutely was not. I think she is an incredibly smart woman and has been.
Yeah.
And I think that intellect in her lyrics and that emotional intelligence is something that has really resonated with people over the course of time. And I think Fiddle in the Drum is one of those songs that embodies that so, so well.
Yeah, I mean, you think of Both Sides now, and you think of that older version that we've heard in, I mentioned already, Love Actually.
Mm-hmm.
The best version, I think, is Mabel Mercer, who did the song. I think she was 70 or 75.
Yeah.
I mean, the song is I mean, that's the right age, if you will, to do that song. And yet she wrote that, what, in her 20s?
Exactly.
Yeah, and, you know, she got a lot of flack for that when the song first came out. People were, you know, a little bit skeptical, like, oh, how can, you know, she be writing and singing about this when she's only in her 20s?
Yeah.
But I think that that's also something that's really beautiful about Joni's songbook, is that it resonates with you when you're in your 20s. And then when you look, you know, when you go back to it in your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, your 70s, your 80s, it resonates with you again, because the thing that's so beautiful about her songs are that they're honest moments when they're being felt. You know, I mean, you can't learn a lesson until after you've learned it.
Yeah.
So if you listen to a song, if something like Both Sides now in your 20s, you might think, oh my gosh, you know, this is about a relationship that I went through. And then when you listen to it in your 80s, like, you have all this life experience that just really enriches your experience of listening to her lyrics.
How many of her pieces are in this show Circle Game?
There's 29 pieces.
It must have been hard to get it down to 29 when you could think of...
Yeah, absolutely. And paring it down, and, I mean, as we continue to rehearse, who knows what's...
What's it been like for the both of you to look at this project, where it is today as you rehearse before going into the fire hall? From the time when this was being developed at CAP, it's been an incredible journey, hasn't it, both professionally and personally?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it has obviously changed in the 3 years that we've been working on it. And it's going to change again because we have different actors. And that's the other element that really brings the lyrics off the page and off of a record or off of a CD is the performances of the actors that we've hired, and musician actors, and what experiences from their own lives they're going to bring to the pieces to bring them to life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Andrew, I was doing some research on you. I understand that you played Buddy the Elf.
I did, yes. That was last 2 winters ago for the Shemanis Theater Festival on Vancouver Island.
Yeah. See, that's one of my favorite movies ever. Christmas movies, at least.
And you have a good day.
And so I haven't watched or heard any of this musical. I mean, is it like the? I mean, I hate that. That's another dumb question that people ask when they talk about theater and film, especially musicals that are based on films that we all know and love. But what was that experience like playing that character, which we seem to relate to one actor in particular, but now in a musical form?
It was a great joy. It was, I consider myself a really large child. And to get to be this man-child on stage for 6 weeks was so much joy that I got to relive and also share with a full cast and several hundred audience members every night. And for me growing up, I didn't grow up with the movie Elf. I didn't have that kind of deep-seated childhood connection to this story and to Will Ferrell playing this iconic character. I found it much later in life.
Huh.
And to have that kind of outsider's perspective while inhabiting the titular character is really cool because, I mean, I got a glimpse as to why everybody cared about it so much, and then I got to discover that for myself in a new way and then share it with everybody. And, you know, I think the audiences really loved it. I know it was a very successful production for the Shemanis Theater Festival. We as a cast had an amazing time with each other because the story just has so much heart and whimsy and, you know, it got surprisingly emotional despite its levity.
Yeah.
And the script itself stays quite true to the film.
Mm-hmm.
And the songs are really catchy, and it's a great show.
Yeah, well, now that you say that, as much as I love the film, I'd love to see this show.
You should.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. and I've seen you, Anna, in a couple of things, the Arts Club things, like Hairspray, and you had a part in The Producers, is that right?
Yeah,
but you've also done you've done other pieces. You did Ado Annie in Oklahoma, and mm-hmm. you were in A Chorus Line. Who did you play in A Chorus Line?
I played Val, who sings tits and ass.
Ah, there
Dance
you go.
Looks
Yeah. And so for you, I mean, when you think of, because you've run the gamut in terms of the material,
mm-hmm.
you know, Rodgers and Hammerstein through to Hamlisch and Kleban and now Mel Brooks and Mark Shaiman. This evolution of theater, I mean, as you look at the work that you've done, I mean, people seem to knock theater and say that it doesn't have much of musical theater that is much of a future. I mean, mm-hmm. that's not the case, right?
I definitely think that musical theater, is always evolving, as it always has, and it definitely has a future. I mean, there's, you know, of course people have their tastes. Some people like the big Broadway spectaculars, and other people want to see things that are more intimate and, you know, a little bit more topical, dealing with some more serious issues. But I think that music in theater, I mean, music inherently is emotional. And I think that if that can be a tool to help the audience relate to characters or convey emotion, I think music in theater is always a great addition. There's things coming out of Broadway right now that are, you know, musicals to deal with teen suicide and social media, and if that can relate to a younger generation or help an older generation connect with a younger generation, I think that it's an incredibly valuable medium.
And Andrew, you're a musical director, and you've directed a number of productions. I guess in terms of the music, I mean, that will continue as it evolves, right? I mean, we'll get the shows. We'll get new shows that they'll be playing years and years from now, just as we have throughout history, right?
I mean, I would hope so. I think there, I know particularly amongst a lot of regional theaters and theater companies within Canada, there's a big kind of question mark at the moment as the times seem to be shifting in terms of how theater as a medium will progress in the future, as subscriber bases are dwindling and their companies are trying to figure out how to reach a younger demographic and tell stories that are more aligned with how they view the world as this upcoming, not just consumer base, but group of active, engaged citizens, audience members, artists or art enthusiasts or, you know, people who are just into experiencing things in a group, in a cathartic group setting, like theater or a concert or going to a dance performance or improv or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a really kind of exciting, buzzing, bubbly time happening right now where we're kind of in uncharted territory. Everybody is trying to figure out a way to evolve in a way that still lets people use the tools of storytelling, of, creating a cathartic moment, happy, sad, angry, or otherwise, for an audience. Everybody's still trying to figure out how to rewrite that textbook. So it's really exciting for us to get to be able to act as creators and directors on this piece, to try and speak to people of a similar age that mm-hmm. are younger, quote-unquote millennials,
mm-hmm.
to speak to people of our parents' generation who grew up on this material, and everybody in between.
And for the both of you, I mean, as professionals in the theater working in this community here, do you see as vibrant a community as we're led to believe, and do you see yourselves here for a long time, or do you think you're going to have to go elsewhere to do what you do?
That is a very interesting question.
Very topical question.
Yeah. We're talking about how so expensive it is to live in this damn town.
it's very expensive to be an artist here, absolutely. And having just had the fortune of traveling across the country as professional artists, kind of experiencing snippets of life in Northern Ontario and the Arctic and the prairies, it's always fascinating to see how different cities approach their views and support for the arts, and how the people do, how the city infrastructure does. And I mean, I would say that there definitely is this indie scene in Vancouver that is very active, mm-hmm. And very eager and hungry and passionate about what they're doing. There are other cities across the country that have, different levels of government that offer more support.
Mm-hmm.
I think for myself, the thing that I've noticed in traveling around the country is that the great thing about Vancouver is that people are encouraged to create their own work here and also branch out into, you know, the different realms of being an artist in the theater. I mean, you know, like Andy and I started out as actors and we've moved on to direction, choreography, creation, and we've been met with really nothing but support for branching out in our careers. And I feel like there are some other Canadian cities that will force you to make a decision about where your career lies.
Mm-hmm.
They'll force, you know,
they want a pigeonhole.
Yeah, they want to know, like, are you marketable as a choreographer or are you going to be an actor?
Mm.
And you have to decide when you're going to make that transition if you'd like to. Whereas I feel like in Vancouver, there's more opportunity to have a career that's interchangeable in discipline.
Well, you're both highly regarded in this town already. And, I can't wait to see this show, and I wish you every success with it. Break a leg, as I say, in your business. I appreciate
Thank
your time
you.
Today.
Thank you so much.
The website for more is firehallartcenter.ca. Andrew Cohen and Anna Kuman join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.